Welcome back to Ward and Elle on Canada Talks. Let's get into hour number two.
On a fishing trip. Okay,
I'm
not
going to...
Oh, wait, this is the Tragically Hip. This is 50 Mission Cap.
It's catchy.
Which is nice because my brother and my parents are in a car together listening right now, and my brother loves the Tragically Hip. So I'm going to pretend we did this for him.
What, are they on a road trip?
No, they're in Los Angeles.
Oh, visiting your brother.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It'd be hilarious if they were on a... Guys, go on a road trip and film it. Like a really far one. Like a whole week of just the three of you in a car together.
Yeah.
Actually, I bet we could sell a reality show of me and my brother and my parents going on a road trip.
You totally could. Are you kidding me? Moving Doorward.
Oh my God, I actually like that name.
I'm really surprised you like it.
I know. Usually I hate everything
that.
You do.
Everybody liked it. The booth went crazy.
It was good,
I thought you'd
right?
hate that.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we're going to pitch a show.
There
I don't
you go.
Know.
It's good. I think it's actually happens. A great idea. I think that's actually a great idea.
Sure. Someone dies at the end.
Well, here's what's funny. That is a really good branding idea.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
I've learned a lot about branding in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. With us now, he is a cattle rancher. Kidding.
No, he's not.
He is a personal branding expert and a master of negotiation. And just in general, the guy we come to when we're looking to learn more about interpersonal skills in the business world. Please welcome the CEO of Evan Thompson & Associates, Evan Thompson.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Always
nice
good to have
you. See you. Yeah, it's been a while.
A month plus, I think.
Yeah.
It's been about 6 weeks this time. Usually we get you right on the 4 week mark, but it's been about 6 weeks this time. So, stop slacking.
Get with it.
Yeah. It's good to see you. You know, we go through this. We went through this with you last year. You can feel an energy when spring hits, right? But that energy is in more than just people walking down the street or, you know, whatever. You feel it actually in the business world. It seems like people start making more announcements and they start coming out with new ideas in business. It seems like spring invigorates people.
Certainly does me. There's no question. I get a spring in my step when I see I can get from A to B without being buried in snow, rain, ice.
The last week or so, I have had so much more energy and accomplished so much more than I probably have since winter started, since fall started.
Well, and for the most part, you know, a lot of people are back from their holidays. They may be thinking of their summer holidays, but at this time of year, they're getting a little feisty. They want to get stuff done. They want to move forward. They want to make their numbers. They want to make their business goals, make personal changes before the seasons really change in earnest.
Yeah, that's true. And they like to maybe they're feeling invigorated, they're doing good work, they want to negotiate a raise maybe.
It's always a good time
negotiate
to
negotiate a new contract. What other I'm trying to think of things you negotiate.
You negotiate with yourself if you want to change up your lifestyle.
Sure.
Yes.
You want to find a better way to get to work that doesn't drive you out of your mind.
I was talking about that with someone just yesterday.
Buy a bike.
No.
Buy a bike.
No,
not if you
I'm
live
not
in
doing
Whitby.
That.
Well,
that's a hell of a commute, Evan.
It is. I think it would take, a couple of days, maybe?
Yeah.
Depends on how fast you ride, but I'm too scared to ride my bike in downtown Toronto.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think you have to constantly have your wits about you. It's almost like being on maneuvers.
Yeah.
You know, in the military.
Well,
it's
and
like
I've
navigating all the time.
I don't think I've ever been that confident a bike rider. So,
So how, I ask myself, is bike riding like negotiating? I see some real bridges between the two.
Okay. I can't guess.
Well, when you're riding your bike and you're riding it safely, you're doing it with a purpose. You know where you want to go. You do it without anger and attitude. Otherwise, you're going to meet someone much bigger than you.
Right.
And you share the road. You don't make it all about yourself. You're thinking of other people who are on the road. So bike riding is a lot like negotiating.
Okay. I mean, you're putting a pretty idyllic view on bike riding because I think a lot of bike riders don't share the road.
No. No.
They do take up the whole road. But the ideal
bike rider.
You're
going to be sharing my bumper to keep that up.
Ideally, but you're right. So the best thing, I think a lot of people make the mistake of when they're negotiating with someone else, maybe even when they're negotiating with themselves, is they get almost, I want to say defensive, but defensive in a way that leads to offense. Like, deserve this much. So I'm going to go in a little bit angry, a little bit, I'm not getting what I deserve, and I want what I deserve. And that's probably not a healthy mindset.
No, it's not, because it keeps you stoked in your own energy zone, where good negotiation really involves the merging of energies to reach a common goal, win-win. As much as we've heard that that conversation and that phrase so many times, win-win really is the essence of good negotiating. And if you go in stoked up and angry, you're going to lose the thread. You're going to lose the empathy and the insight that you have into the other person's view. And if you don't understand what they want, what they're coming from, where they're coming from, then it starts to go in circles, and eventually the thread is lost. And then you get really anxious and frustrated.
And that's interesting, because I think a lot of people think that in the business world, there's always a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate part about operating that way is that eventually at some point you're going to be the loser, right? Whereas if you come from a win-win mentality, hopefully that's a better business practice.
Well, absolutely. And negotiation has to have a root or a reason. There has to be an origin behind calling to sit with someone, whether you want, you mentioned a raise. If you're sitting with your supervisor and it's your review time, you know, you really do need to know exactly what you're asking for. Not that you deserve it. Being deserving really does not count in negotiation. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's about what the other side will gain by capitulating or accepting your terms.
Well, oh.
That's the win-win.
Right. So, yeah, this will benefit me, but here's how it will also benefit you.
Exactly.
I get it. Exactly. Sort of.
You know what? It's funny that we're talking about this, because one of the things we're seeing right now, not in business, but in politics, we're hearing so much about negotiations. Earlier in the show, we were talking about Prime Minister Trudeau wanting to spend less time doing the question period on the Hill. And people are talking about, you know, he needs to be doing more of that. And I said, I want to see more efficiency in government. What we have here is a failure to negotiate on both sides. One of the reasons that people elected Donald Trump president is they said they thought he was a negotiator. Today he gave a speech where he talked about what a great negotiator he is. So there's a lot of this talking about negotiating, not just in business now, but in our politics as well.
I think in the political arena, the negotiations we're seeing aren't real negotiations. I think it's a lot of posturing and a lot of dancing around the issues, because the issues are not that easy to understand. And Donald Trump is not an expert in constitutional affairs. Right. He is not an expert on trade negotiation. He fires from the hip. And this is what generates the momentum in the social media and the voting population. So it works that way in Canada. It's the age of the voice bite. The details often bore and confuse people.
So what do you do if you're negotiating with someone who doesn't really get what you're negotiating?
Yeah.
You mean they haven't done their homework, they don't understand the facts or the context?
Yes.
Or what we're doing sitting at this table?
Yeah.
You know, what is it that you want from
me?
Or
like why the Civil War happened?
I think you can very diplomatically inform the person you're negotiating with by saying stuff like, you know, as you may recall,
Oh.
We had a conversation 5 years ago in which we discussed a pay increase for me, and now here it is, 2017. So the message is, oops,
you forgot slippage. That I already told you.
Instead of saying, I sat
Ward's
here.
Everyone's going to get, as you may recall.
Everyone's going to get
so
fired
much from
up.
Now on.
Yeah, I was just sitting here going, ugh.
Ward forgets stuff I tell him all the time, and I'm like, I told you 3 times already. So now instead of me coming off mean by being like, I've already told you this, I'm just going to say, Ward, as you may recall, and then he knows that he's a dum-dum without me spelling it out.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Our pre-show meetings just got more negotiable.
And if you really want to soften the blow and not make the person feel, you know, completely idiotic.
Okay.
You say, now help me out here. I may be wrong. You don't want to go too far with the mea culpa.
And now then I will say that to Al all the time.
Yeah, because I'm never wrong.
Okay.
Well, this we know. I appreciate that.
And I can't disrupt my brand by acting like I might be wrong sometimes.
Yeah, no one has to capitulate unnecessarily. But if you simply say, I may be wrong or help me out here, but I recall that. And then that gives you the option of laying out the chessboard before anyone starts moving. And that the games are underway. The rules of engagement are clear. People know what is being discussed.
What if someone is trying to negotiate with you and they don't understand? Like, let's say an employee comes to you and it's like, Evan, I would like a raise, and here are the reasons why. But, like, they're all bad reasons, and it's a terrible employee. Like, how do you let them know? Because that's not a win-win, right? That's only half a win. So how do you then diplomatically go, oh, you're not getting anything you want in this meeting?
I think you really need to review the file. You need to review the employee's performance so you can bring some good things to the table. It's not... A salary negotiation should not be a beatdown. It should be, we're really pleased with all these areas. Mm-hmm. There are areas that you could enhance, and I'm sure that going forward you have the skills to do so.
And you could
no,
say,
you're not getting a raise at this time.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, you have to come out with it.
Can you, I mean, you could say also, like, here are some areas that need improvement. We could revisit this conversation, you know, when you've had some time to work on these.
And how long do you think that might take? What do you feel is a fair time frame? A month, 3 months? And then they're forced to think, can they really turn it around in a month?
Right.
Or is it better to just keep trying to improve and then 3 months later?
Yeah.
And that is that gives you, as the employer, a larger time frame horizon to really assess their performance.
And then in 3 months, if they haven't improved, you give them the axe.
Yeah. Out you go. And
I think that's a little drastic.
I've never had an employee.
God, me saying that. I shouldn't be talking like that. I'm supposed to be an empathetic business coach.
Yes.
There's no empathy there.
I think hit the brick, sister, is a little extreme.
I didn't say what you say to them. I just said, you know what? You gave them plenty of chances, Evan. Get rid of them.
Well, I don't know one person who has never been, shall we say, dismissed, outplaced, downsized.
Being fired never feels good. Sometimes it feels worse than others, because sometimes it's... I have worked for people that have not fired me in a sensitive way.
Yeah.
Well, that raises an interesting point. You know,
I was a bad employee, to be fair.
Well,
and I had a drug problem.
Well, the sensitivity piece really...
It was at a church.
No,
figures,
it wasn't.
Figures largely
yeah.
in a successful negotiation.
She was an airline pilot.
I wasn't... No one's life was ever in my hands, but, you know, punctuality wasn't my strong suit.
She was an air traffic controller.
I'm so sorry, Evan. You come on here every time to have a conversation with us, and we make it ridiculous.
No, this is a conversation.
Yes, that's true.
This is a conversation among the three of us. It's not all about me. It's like a good negotiation. We're sort of
see how good you are
here. a triumvirate. We're negotiating to get our points in while being respectful of the other people's points around the table. And it's your show, so I tend to agree more than I disagree. But
see how
we'll
good
see.
He is?
I know, right?
So good.
All right.
I'm Evan, taking my own medicine.
Evan, help me out here. I may be wrong, but isn't sometimes the failure on behalf of management and not the employee for improper management or poor management?
Oh, absolutely. Managers have issues. Managers have payments to make on their houses. They have difficulties with their health, their children. They want a raise. They feel in many cases undervalued. There's no options for them. There's no C-suite for them on the horizon. They feel beat down in many cases.
Now, let's tie this into the sensitivity thing, because I think that is lacking in general. And I think especially if people are beaten down and having a hard time and they have people working under them, it really ends up being a trickle-down situation where I'm unhappy and I'm miserable, so I'm going to treat you in a way that puts you in the same position as me. But I think that if you are more sensitive and better at being thoughtful with the people below you, you're probably going to get better work done.
Absolutely. Emotional intelligence is now more important in hiring senior executives than IQ.
So you're saying I have a chance.
IQ will get you through school. EQ, emotional intelligence, will get you through life. Your skill at managing employees who are facing different conflicting situations is much more important in winning their trust than the power you hold over them.
Right. Right.
Used to be, I've got 6 degrees, I'm an executive, super pumped up VP. That doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
It is truly the relationship and the trust. And that's when negotiation cannot become a negative, but it can become really very, very positive, because you have a meeting of the minds in the best case scenario.
We are speaking to Evan Thompson of Evan Thompson Associates. Let's take a quick break, because when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that, what you were just talking about when it comes to negotiating with the higher-ups, with CEOs, with presidents, with vice presidents, because I want to talk about how the relationship used to be in business, how it's been for a while, and where it needs to go.
Perfect.
Sound good?
Great.
We will be right back. You're listening to Ward and Al on Channel 167, Canada Talks.
You're listening to the number one duo in Canadian talk radio. This is Ward and Al.
All right, we are speaking to Evan Thompson from Evan Thompson & Associates. He is a personal branding expert and business consultant. We've been talking about negotiations, and why don't we open the phones, 855-958-8255, 855-958-TALK. If you have any questions for Evan, something a little new we're trying here on the show. We don't often open the phones when we have guests, but we're going to start doing that. So 855-958-8255, 855-958-TALK. We were talking about negotiating, and you know, you were talking about the interaction between people like a vice president or a CEO and the employees, and you were talking about IQ versus EQ. That IQ gets you through school, EQ gets you through life. And it used to be, you know, you come in and look at all my degrees, and that was enough. Here's some interesting facts I was reading recently when it comes to CEOs. CEOs in the U.S. and CEOs in Canada, both. And how that has changed over the years. In 1955, the average CEO made about four times what the average worker makes.
Mm-hmm.
Now they make 300 times what the average worker makes. But on top of that, in 1955, the average CEO went to the same five universities in Canada and the U.S. It was all the same. If you include Canada and the U.S. together, it's something like the same six universities every CEO manages to go to. Ready? In 1955, same six universities. In 2017, the same six universities. We're getting our CEOs from the same places we always have. It's the same people that are getting into these jobs. The difference is now they're paid 300 times more. And what they're saying that CEOs are having to go back to is being on a level more like their employees because they've been out of touch with them. And they can't relate and they can't negotiate with their employees. And by that, I don't mean just business. They don't know how to negotiate a conversation with the average employee. What do you think about that?
I think that's a function of a couple of things. The wealth that is being amassed in a very small section of the population, the C-suite, you know, the one percenters as they're called, is certainly growing. The divide between the wealthy and the poor is growing. And social media, digital communication, has really played a part in diminishing the value and opportunity for one-to-one conversations such as the one we're having here.
Right.
Can you imagine how this would fly if we were doing this by text?
No.
It wouldn't be the same energy. There'd be very little conversation at all. This is what C-suite managers face because they don't have time to get in front of their younger employees.
Now, Evan, I really should have asked this a year ago, but what do you mean by C-suite?
Corporate suite. Any person with the letter C at the beginning of their position.
Right.
Chief Investment Officer, Chief Executive Officer.
CFO.
That's right. A bit buzzy.
COO.
But the C-suite is where these people gather to run their various enterprises.
I get it now.
Club. C-club.
I always, because I never really got your Twitter handle, but I was like, whatever. But now I get it.
After all these years.
I know.
All you needed to do was ask.
I know. That's why I'm like, I'm really embarrassed. I should have asked this at least a year ago. But okay.
Well, now we know it's out.
Listen, I'm in the C-suite. I'm the CEO of Allison Door Incorporated. It's not a real incorporation.
It's not incorporated.
It's not incorporated, but it's a business and I own it.
You should just call it Door Enterprises. Doesn't have to.
Oh, okay.
See?
Anyway, I derailed it by being dumb.
no.
The point
is,
A
lot of people don't know what C-suite means. I totally get that.
No, but I really should have asked a long time ago.
But I mean, there is something to be said about that there's been this gap for a long time and it's been growing and, you know, slowly but surely the pitchforks are coming. That change is coming and it's not going to be enough to be from one of those six universities and to tout your IQ. You're going to have to, in order to lead as the business world is changing, you're going to have to be able to work on the EQ.
You know, without in any way criticizing any of these institutions that have generations of achievers, you know, supporting them and bringing new students to them. The time may come when it's not a great thing to be from one of these places. The
right.
world is getting flatter. Globalization may change this.
Right.
You know, we have the situation in Toronto in the legal industry. We have what are known as the Seven Sisters. And these are seven iconic Toronto law firms.
Oh.
And much like the institutions you were talking about, this formerly was the incubator for the lawyers of tomorrow.
Right.
And that's now rapidly changing because law is changing. The way clients are served is changing.
Well, and I think, you know, and talking about how, you know, a lot of CEOs come from these six Ivy League schools, I think the perception of the Ivies is changing.
Yeah.
Right? And so that also changes everything. But our perception of education, period, is changing with the internet and all that kind of stuff. With the people that you work with, how open do you find the C-level clients to this concept of emotional intelligence? Is it something that you kind of have to convince them about and sell them on, or are they recognizing that there is a gap in how they relate to and communicate with people?
The majority of the clients I serve in the C-suite see the necessity for sharpening emotional intelligence.
Right.
Because when you are emotionally intelligent, you build trust with people, you're with your employees. No CEO or senior management wants turnover.
Yeah.
And not just singling out the millennials, there are boomers who are no longer as willing to accept the corporate brand, toe the corporate line as they used to be. Mm-hmm. So social media is opening so many new doors for them. You've seen the website, you know, the Glass Door, which talks about earnings, ratings of various corporations, and a job seeker can go to these sites,
right,
and get the skinny on what it's like to work with this CEO, and they rate them,
right,
like restaurants
or
dentists.
Oh, I didn't know that. This is fun. Yelp for CEOs.
You know, that's one of the reasons the CEO pay went up. One of the reasons CEO pay has gone up so drastically over the past couple of decades is that it used to be something very private. They used to be very, very private. And then once it became public what CEOs make and they started announcing it and Forbes started putting it out and everything like that, they started competing with each other. And so it became it became a game of who gets paid more, who gets the better golden parachute, who gets the better stock options, these things.
The person with the most toys at the end of their career wins.
Yeah.
That is still very much in place. But when you were talking about the negotiation between the younger employees and, mm-hmm. and the senior managers, many senior managers are really accomplished. They're really proud of their stuff and what they've done and the power that they hold. But they forget that a negotiation, the best negotiation from their point of view, is to listen. Because then they can identify the gaps in the workforce, in the areas that the employee wants to improve. And 70% listening, 30% talking will get you much more information and help you earn the trust of the person that you're negotiating with.
When you're talking to a manager that does want to be better, and recognizes that they don't maybe have those people skills. Listening, I feel like it's going to be your answer. What's the first thing you tell them to work on? Is it listening?
I simply suggest that they try and step away from their role and put themselves in the position of the person on the other side of the table, the person whose performance and value to the company must increase. I don't advocate a big change over be nicer, listen more, tell more jokes.
Please don't
about
tell
the
more
kids.
Jokes if you have no experience being a jokey person. Don't do it. It's weird.
If you're a process, systems, numbers person, you will always be that person.
Yeah.
But what you can do is you can listen more and you can gradually try and become more engaged in baby steps.
Right.
You don't need to be, you know, one moment an actuary, the next minute a comedian, because then it gets really bad because you're betraying your brand and you look like an idiot. Simply stated.
What if looking like an idiot is your brand?
Speaking. I will say this. I really like, and we are speaking to Evan Thompson, evanthompsonandassociates.com. You guys can call in if you have any questions or comments for Evan, 855-958-8255. When Al talks about listening, that's one thing I like you talking about, you know, relate, put yourself in that person's shoes, you know, that kind of a talk, because in many ways, I find that's where communication breaks down. We have in so many ways become a society that talks before listening. It's been, I talk about my New Year's resolution is to listen more and talk less. I only recently realized that was my New Year's resolution last year. And it's something that I constantly am working on. But I think we as a society need to work on that and putting ourselves in other people's shoes. It seems like more and more in business, in interpersonal communications, we're all waiting for our turn to speak and say how we feel, you know?
Yes, waiting for someone to finish so you can jump in. You're not listening to what they're saying. You're waiting for your chance to get in line or maybe jump the queue. And if you're a CEO or if you're a very powerful individual, you feel you can do that.
Yeah.
And people don't like it. They'll put up with it, but they won't put out for you when it comes time to pulling all-nighters.
Yeah.
As tax season approaches to get the returns done.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, you can get away with a lot when you're near when you're at the top of the food chain, but it doesn't mean the people, the fish aren't going to help the shark out when he needs overtime done.
Well, speaking of fish and sharks, one of the things that I have learned over the years about really successful negotiation is to be comfortable with acknowledging what you want, mm-hmm. being able to express it, and moving outside your comfort zone.
Mm.
If you've always been the sort of person who wants to please and feels that pleasing will hold your seat at the company table, the company dinner, then that won't work for you anymore.
Right.
You have to do much more. You have to perform. You have to really add value. Look at what's happening in so many corporations where mean management has come in, or nasty management. It's a term.
Oh, really?
And nasty management entails cutting people.
Right.
Cutting down divisions, cutting product lines, distribution, all to preserve what's left in the face of amazing competition.
There's entire companies that specialize in doing that, coming in and doing that, then leaving. Because that way there's no, and the theory is that way there's no lasting animosity because the people that did it left. They came in, cleaned house, and went away.
It's what the movie Office Space is about.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right.
The Bobs come in and fire everybody.
Up in the Air is like that as well. Now, I will say there's a show called Billions that's on Showtime, and it's all about stock exchange people and analysts, and it's very interesting. But I just watched last night this week's episode, and there was such an interesting thing that goes into this when we talk about managing people and how to speak to them. There was a whole episode about a person who was in charge of firing people for the first time. And, you know, she was told, okay, you've got to fire people. Go interview all these people and figure out who has to be let go. And she interviews somebody who comes in and says, she goes, let's talk to you, Rudy. I want to talk about how your performance has been weak. And he says, you know, my name's not Rudy. And she goes, what do you mean? He goes, oh, everyone calls me Rudy, and I like that. My name's Peter. They call me Rudy because I saw the CEO of this company speak when I was in university, and I came up to him and told him, one day I'm going to work for you. And he told me how I could. And I worked really hard, and I graduated. And then he gave me a job here. And they call me Rudy, like the movie Rudy, the guy that dreamed of being here. And one day when he got here and they gave him his shot, despite the fact he was the underdog, I didn't have the grades. I didn't go to the school I should have, but they let me come here anyway. And she was like, and how do you feel? And he's like, I thought he was going to be a mentor to me, and he wasn't. I thought there was going to be one-on-one moments, and there aren't. I thought he was going to really lead me and show me, and I was going to learn how to do this better on the job, and I haven't. And it was... that was the coolest moment in that show to me, is somebody going and he says, yeah, I could be way better at this job. I really wish I was, but I promise you nobody cares more about it than I do. And that was really, really cool.
And then he got fired?
He didn't. They didn't fire him because it's a TV show and not the real world.
Yeah.
You know? You know, but I
have
still
have you seen the movie Rudy, Evan?
Do I
you
have get not. I will make it my business to.
We're going to need you to leave.
Okay. First of all, it is one of the greatest feel-good movies of all time. Mm. Also, it's a football movie, which is yay. And has one of the best original scores by Jerry Goldsmith ever.
I'll certainly check it out.
I'm going to make a note. And next time you come here, I'm going to ask you if you watched Rudy yet, because that's your homework.
Can I provide the spoiler in the plot analysis?
Yeah. The movie's been out for a long time. Yeah.
Missed it.
He dies at the end.
No, listen, he doesn't. He's still alive. Spoilers. It's based on a true story.
Patty asks, I don't know why I'm stammering like Bob Newhart. Patty asks, how do you start the conversation to get management to see value in reflection and change?
Ooh.
I would suggest you talk with your supervisor, your immediate supervisor, who ideally has a voice at the senior management level. If he or she does not, then you pick your spot and you approach a senior manager and say, I have some ideas I'd like to run by you. I've been working with this company for a very short time, and therefore my observations are fresh, or I've been here forever.
Yeah.
And they're validated.
I know how it works. Yeah.
Let's get together for a cup of coffee. And that, I have learned, is really, really powerful. One-to-one, a conversation, sharing ideas.
And if you're too afraid to do that, send them an anonymous email being like, you guys got to up your EQ. That like was my recommendation. Definitely not Evan's.
like a threat.
Threat, but just so they don't know who did it.
Sometimes, actually, you raise a good point about email.
Yeah.
A lot of people do rely on email if they're shy, they're introverted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly acceptable as long as it's short.
Yeah.
What I do is I'm old fashioned. I write a letter. Okay. What I do is I go to like newspapers and magazines and I clip out the words that I want and then I glue those to a sheet of paper, you know? So it's like a big I and then like am going to, you know, and I send them the message that way.
Is that a ransom note or am I confusing it?
And I just mail it to them and then they know how I feel. They know how I feel.
It's fired.
I don't
a
have
lot.
To sign my name. I just, you know, you better or I'm going to. And I, yeah, it gets their attention, those magazine clippings.
Further to the query about affecting change in culture. The conversation's easier if you put it in context of the recipient. In other words, I'm aware of the changes that you're implementing in our culture, and I appreciate and I see value. I have some ideas.
Right.
And even if they're little, almost useless changes, at least you're acknowledging that the recipient's trying
doing something.
To do something, and you're there to help and support,
right.
Not to complain.
Yeah. It's a good one.
So always be helpful.
Evan, as usual, you enlightened us with your presence. Evan Thompson and Associates.com. Check it out, and we'll see you in a month, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
@C-Suite Prospects on Twitter, which is I totally get now.